It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. The birth rate in America hit a 30-year low in 2017, part of a trend that the CDC is watching closely. We've been below what's called the viable replacement rate since 1971. Many couples are choosing not to have children, and they often get pushback about that decision, but say the rewards outweigh the criticism. Can you have a fulfilling life if you don't have kids? Well, that's the question we'll explore this hour on The Morning Show. If you've chosen to live child-free, what did you consider when you made that decision? Let us know at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll start our conversation with Anna Goldfarb. She writes about relationships and pop psychology for The New York Times, Vice, The Cut, and more. She recently wrote a piece for The New York Times titled, How to Leave a Legacy When You Don't Have Children. Anna, before we get to the details about how people can leave a legacy behind when they don't have children, I want to know, how much is leaving a legacy on the minds of people who aren't having kids?
I think it's really on their minds. I talked with Karen Malone Wright, who is the founder of the Not Mom Conference, which is a conference for child-free and childless women. And she told me that that was one of the number one concerns people came to her with. And that inspired me to write the article, since it seems to be out there in the zeitgeist. Like, what direction should I move in?
Yeah, I guess when I was looking at this topic, I was trying to think, okay, my wife and I had two children, and I don't think we thought about legacy when we were thinking about having children. One part of that was maybe to get our parents off our back so they could have grandchildren, but being a little facetious there. But I don't remember that as being a real part of that decision. So, you know, that's why I'm wondering is, you know, how much is that on the minds of people? And what do we mean by legacy anyway?
Well, I think people would like something to continue on after them when they pass. And I do think it's a huge rationale for people that want to carry on their family name, that want to carry on their family traditions. I'm Jewish. I know there's a lot of conversation in Judaism about it's your duty to have kids, to carry on the traditions. So that's part of the legacy. Like, I think that's a really important factor why people have kids. And it can be very, you do receive some pushback if you decide to go a different way and make your path in with a little more personal touch, something that's driven by passion as opposed to biology.
Anna, let me ask you this. Are you someone who has decided not to have children?
Yeah, well, me and my husband decided together. And it's been great. I recommend it.
Did you always know that you wanted to live a child-free life, or was it a decision you made later?
Well, personally, I was known within the child-free community as a fence-sitter. I could probably have gone either way. But my husband wasn't excited about being a parent, and we talked about it, and I was fine with it. I was like, well, what does our life look like if we don't have children? And I realized our life looked pretty awesome, so I was on board. I was like, let's do it. But I'm also a very active aunt. I do have young people in my life, so I don't feel like I'm losing. I feel all I see is the ways I can add to my loved ones' lives.
Mm-hmm. Our conversation this morning is about living a fulfilling life and leaving a legacy when you don't have kids. What do people say to you when they learn you've never raised children or that you don't want to? Do you bother explaining why? Do they argue with you that in hopes that you'll change your mind? We're talking with Anna Goldfarb, who writes about relationships and pop psychology. Now let's bring in Glynis McNichol. She's a writer and co-founder of The List. That's a networking platform for women. She's written pieces for The New York Times, The Guardian, Forbes, The Cut, and more. Her new memoir is called No One Tells You This. Glynis, you've written about what it is like to be a woman who has decided to be child-free. Tell me what that's been like for you.
Good morning. It's been interesting. I think most of the response to the book has been across the board positive. I think one of the most surprising and encouraging responses to the book was all of the emails and letters I've received from women in their 60s and 70s who decided not to have children and wanted to write and tell me that they'd never regretted the decision and that I shouldn't worry so much about it. So that was somewhat unexpected, but I think interesting, because we don't tend to hear those stories so much when we talk about, you know, motherhood and children and child rearing.
So what do people say, think or say when they learn this about you?
I mean, it's not as if I go to a party and introduce myself as somebody who doesn't want to have kids. I think most of my friends, I've had a large group of friends for, you know, many years, are not enormously surprised by this. I also have a lot of children in my life. I'm very involved in the lives of the children around me. So I sometimes laugh at the term child-free. I know many women find that preferable to childless, but it seems ironic to me that I do have a lot of children in my life, as it turns out. And so it's maybe not the most accurate way to describe it. I don't know. People are supportive. I think in general, people have more of a problem with the idea of it than the reality of it. You know, no one who knows me sort of comes to me and says, "Are you sure?" They're like, "Great, can you come over and help me with mine?"
Yeah, you have all this time. You should be able to. I was picturing my mother, if she had decided to remain childless, for which I'm grateful she didn't make that decision. But if she had, and someone asked her about it, her response would have been, "Is this causing a problem for you?"
Right.
Do you think there's an unfair perception that as a woman you can't leave a legacy without having children?
What I think about many of these conversations is the ability to decide not to have children, the ability to choose what you want your life to look like, the ability to support yourself as a woman is all very, very new. You know, up until not that long ago, women could not be financially independent. And I think subsequently, the only legacy they would be able to leave behind were children. So I think we're early on in this conversation of what it looks like, what a life looks like without children, and how we redefine what legacies are and what is important. I've quite honestly never thought about leaving a legacy behind. I guess I'm in the minority on that. I'm also a writer, though, so I think it's easy for me to think of my writing as what I'm leaving behind, but mm-hmm. I don't, you know, this is all very new. It's all of these conversations are new. So figuring out what you want to leave behind and how you want to leave it behind, I find that idea sort of exciting and exhilarating, but also not surprising that people are struggling to understand what it might look like outside of motherhood.
Here's an email from Jen who writes, "I'm an elementary teacher. I decided not to have children because I wanted to put all of my energy into teaching my students. I've never thought about leaving a legacy. I guess my legacy is having an impact on as many children as I possibly can." Glennis, Anna, who wants to talk about what Jen has to say? Is this kind of typical of the people that you both talk to about this? Anna, you first, and then Glenna very quickly. Actually, you know what? I take that back. Let's hold this to the other side of the break. I just happened to look at the clock. Good thing I did. Bad time management by yours truly. We will talk about Jen's email after a short break. We're talking with Glennis McNichol and Anna Goldfarb about couples, about women who choose to be child-free and what that means. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. What have you accomplished because you chose not to have children? How have you discovered that you can contribute to your community in a unique way? Let us know. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I have two guests this hour. Anna Goldfarb writes about relationships for the New York Times and other publications, and she joins author Glynis McNichol, whose new memoir is all about living a child-free life by choice. Just before the break, we had an email from Jen, which I'll read again, and then, Anna, I want you to respond to that, and then I'd also like to hear from Glynis on this. Jenna wrote, I am an elementary teacher. I've decided not to have children because I wanted to put all of my energy into teaching my students. I've never thought about leaving a legacy. I guess my legacy is having an impact on as many children as I possibly can. Anna, what do you think about what Jen writes, or Jerry writes?
I think it makes perfect sense. I've worked with small children as a substitute teacher, and even just a few days with kids, you see that they require a lot of emotional bandwidth, and I think it makes perfect sense that she would choose to direct her energy in this way. I think it's a really thoughtful, like, admirable, just wonderful way to touch a lot of lives. So keep it up.
Glynis?
I just want to push back a little bit on this framing of, by deciding not to have a child, a woman is asked how she's going to contribute to her community. I don't think we ever ask men these questions. If a man decides not to have a child, I'm not sure it's ever, you know, factored into part of his identity, or he's then asked to show proof of how he's filling that time or space. I think we can all live, you know, incredibly valuable, fulfilling lives with and without children. And I think we're, as a culture, really struggling, excuse me, to understand what a woman's life looks like without children, because, again, it's so new. But the expectation you fill that extra time and space with work is, I'm not sure, a fair one. And I do not think it gets, lobbed at men very often. I think women are capable of living fulfilling lives however they choose to live them. And if that's with children, fantastic. And if it's not, I believe that you can have a good life too.
So it's not surprising that men wouldn't get the same questions about being an adult without children. That has to do with our cultural and our history as a culture. Men don't get asked the same questions as women about pretty much anything.
Yes.
And so this is really no different.
Well, I think this is an extreme version. I think up until, you know, somewhat, you know, in my lifetime, essentially, women were not able to make decisions about whether or not they wanted children unless they didn't get married. So I think the expectation that a woman's life can only be worthwhile or valuable is tied to motherhood in ways that we're still, you know, negotiating. I think that's unfair to mothers too. I think, you know, having children is one aspect of a woman's life. It's not necessarily the entire version of her life either. So I don't know. I do get frustrated when people, you know, say, oh, well, you must be putting all this energy into your career. Well, yeah. And a number of other things. So women can be happy outside of motherhood as well. Happy is a tricky word. Fulfilled, challenged.
Yeah. So, Glynis, you think leaving a legacy is something everyone should be thinking about, whether they have children or not?
I guess. I don't think that leaving a legacy. I mean, I think the idea that you would have children so you could leave a legacy is also, I understand the motivation, certainly, but like this expectation that children are going to solve these things, or that you would have children that would carry on your legacy, so-called, in a way that you approve of, I think, you know, you don't have to look very far to find families where that is not the case. Children are not sort of like an insurance policy or a solution. I think hopefully your legacy in life is how you've lived your life, really. And I guess I think I was not raised in a family that thought like this. I'm not, and I appreciate that many people are, and this is a real concern, but leaving a legacy can be, you know, that's approachable in so many ways. There's so many ways to spend your time and your life and your energy and your love in ways that, you know, affect generation after generation behind you. I think children is just one way.
Mm-hmm. Anna, what do you think? Is leaving a legacy something everyone should be thinking about, whether they have children or not?
Well, of course, but I think it's really about how to make a mark on the world in a way that makes sense for you. A lot of people are very proud of their institutions that they attended, their schools, their alma maters, their career field. It's like it's a drive. So what can I leave in this world when I'm gone? I mean, like Linus, I'm a writer too. And I think that's part of my legacy is I've written so much. You know, when you write a book, it's like, okay, I'm set. Like, someone can look into my mind once I'm gone. But I think a lot of people want to make a contribution, especially to charities, to pet charities, environmental charities. There are ways to help other things and to carry on your values, to make the world a place you want to see, shape it in your image.
Mm-hmm.
And to give back, you know, to help the next generation, to mentor, to teach, to volunteer. I definitely think it's on a lot of people's minds. And maybe it kicks in when you're older and you realize, like, but it's on my mind all the time. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Glynis, you've often been questioned about being child-free. What went into your decision? Was there some sort of aha moment when you first knew, you know what, I don't want to have kids?
I think it was more gradual. The answer to that is yes and no. I think, as I said, I have a lot of children in my life, and I think I spent my 30s just assuming I would probably have kids. And when it got close to 40, I was home with my sister just had her third child, and I was home with my, you know, infant nephew, and I had just turned 40 a few weeks earlier, and I had this, what I sort of jokingly refer to as the showdown, where I was just looking at him and thinking, do you want this? Because you want to have a baby. I think we can also talk, there's a lot of ways to be a mother, but if you want to have a baby, you have to make that decision pretty quickly right now. Like, you have to get on it. And I think after a lot of thinking about the life I'd built for myself and how I was choosing to live and what I valued about my life, I really decided I didn't want to have a baby enough to have one, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's interesting when Anna said a fence sitter. I'm not as familiar with the terms that get used in sort of a child-free community, but I probably was that. Like, I think I just thought at that point I realized I didn't want children badly enough to pursue them in the way I knew I'd need to, that I'd be okay without children.
So how difficult was that decision when to pull the proverbial trigger on that? Or was it more about society making it difficult for you?
Oh, no, it was about me. And I also think this is a decision, like, I hesitate to frame these things in such black and white terms as if there was one moment I made the decision and that's the end of it. I think this is a conversation women have with themselves continually. I believe, of course, there are women who know for sure they don't want children and that's the end of it. For me, it was and continues to be sort of like I increasingly am comfortable with the idea I don't want children, but I definitely walk up to the line a lot and really ask myself the question again and again, like, are you really sure? Are you really sure? Because it's, you know, it's a complicated, fraught question. And culturally speaking, I think the culture around motherhood, the way we value women's lives can be difficult and overwhelming if you're in it, obviously. But when you're outside, it can be hard to see yourself reflected in the culture. And that can also be overwhelming and scary. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a constant. I mean, I am 44 now, so the conversation is happening less frequently. But it's definitely something that I think about and question a lot.
Okay. Anna Gofarb, we have about a minute until the news. The kids' conversation is a personal one. When you're talking to people, how can a simple question about whether or not you have children turn contentious or awkward in certain circumstances?
Well, I think that it's been proven that it does invoke moral outrage in people when you tell them you're choosing not to procreate. It's almost a reflex, and I've received pushback when I've disclosed my decision or my situation. And real quick, I agree with Glynis that it's not just a showdown. It's not just a moment. It's usually a series of inventories you take, and you check in with your values and see if they align with your situation. So it's a very textured, for at least for me, it was a textured decision to not have kids. It wasn't just 1 minute, the flip is switched and we're done. It's like a constant check-in.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break for some news. We'll come back and carry on our conversation after that. Glynis McNichol and Anna Gofarb are with me to explore the aspects of life lived without children. Do you regret not having children? Maybe you have kids and you love them, but you wish you would have made different decisions. Tell us your story. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. If you've decided to be child-free, do you regret not having children? Maybe you have kids and love them, but you wish you would have made different decisions. Tell us your story, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Author Glynis McNichol and writer Anna Gofarb are talking with us about the conversations they have because they're adults who don't have kids. We have a lot of people on the phone who want to join the conversation. Let's welcome Tony from Sheboygan. Tony, thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
So you had asked about mothers who had had children and wished they had made different choices, and it's hard for me to use those terms that I wish that I'd made different choices, but I liked what one caller said when she said that she inventoried her situation, and I feel like I didn't do that well. I have five children. Three of them are, two are adults and one's close to adulthood. They're older. And then in my 40s or late 30s and early 40s, I had two additional children, and I worked really hard to conceive those children. It was difficult for us. And now I have a toddler and infant at home, and I don't want to say I'm regretting them because I love them, and I wouldn't want to have them, but I feel like maybe I didn't make the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Tony, thanks for sharing your story with us. Anna Gofarb, do you want to respond to this, and then Glynis?
I just want to give her a hug. Tony, that's so brave of you and courageous to just say that out loud. I don't think a lot of women feel that they can say that. And I understand. And I'm just want to give her validation and solidarity.
Mm-hmm. Glynis, do you think this story is typical, or that a lot of women go through this?
I think it's a lot more common than we would ever know. As Anna said, a very brave thing to say. I think these are enormously fraught, intense conversations to have, to say I don't regret a person, but regretting the life that might have been had you thought through things or had you been encouraged to think through things. I think, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to write about this was just to give an example of what another version of life might look like, because we're not really presented with very many narratives around what women's lives might look like. So I think there are a lot of women who, it gets framed again in these sort of very stark terms of I regret having children. I don't think that's a fair way to assess it. I think it's more, I regret not understanding that there might have been different ways to live, because of course I maybe didn't see any of those, or it wasn't presented to me as an option. But mm-hmm. that's so difficult to speak about these things, and you're very rarely encouraged to do so. So to even just give voice to it is very courageous, I think.
And there's a great deal of guilt associated with all of this as well.
There's a great deal of guilt associated with women's lives in general, I think. There's a lot of shame attached to women's lives. You just look at a magazine counter, you know, there's a lot of shame and guilt attached to the lives of women who do have children and how they're raising them. Women are not, you know, I think very often rewarded for the decisions they make. There's just sort of an industry of telling us what we're doing wrong and how to better ourselves. So yeah, absolutely. And how, of course, you don't ever want your child to think that you regret having them. And I don't think that's a fair way to, you know, define it either, but it's a very complicated conversation.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. John is with us now from Windsor. John, thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Yeah, I am happy to hear a lot of these conversations with women. However, there was a statement that men don't seem to go through this. And I got to tell you, being the first son, the pressure was on. That I have a son. My son's name was Benjamin. And he was going to have a son, and his son's name was going to be John. And I heard that message from the time I was 10 till the time I was 30. I don't have kids, and I don't regret it. I work with families. I work with kids. I have lots of interaction with kids. But, you know, I think that it goes with men as well. There is a lot of pressure there, and I think that that's something that really should be acknowledged, that we have that guilt as well.
John, thanks. Thanks for the call. Glynis, men getting some pressure as well?
Oh, sure. I've heard from many, many men around this subject. So this is not to say to diminish the experience of men or the pressures of family. I think culturally, there is not an expectation around men becoming fathers or justifying their lives when they don't. I think we have lots of ways. Many ways are presented to men to lead fulfilling lives, and we don't question their decision culturally. On a personal level, I think many, many men deal with family expectations, absolutely, and guilt and all the rest of it.
Yeah, the expectation to carry on the family name, for example. Anna Goldfarb, you and your husband made this decision together. How much blowback did he get or pushback did he get from his family?
None. I don't think he got any. I'm the one who had with my family, I think, was more of a thing. But I do want to say about men, I agree with, was it John's point? In my article about leaving a legacy, I went to great pains to include men. I name-checked Joey Ramone, Beethoven, Luther Vandross, Jimi Hendrix, Prince. These are all men who didn't have children. So it is an issue that men deal with too. So I totally see what you're saying, John, and I hear you.
John, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Jerry, who calls us from Lake Mills. Jerry, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning. I think we need to also think about the sustainability of this planet to absorb massive increases in population worldwide. Are we going to continue breeding until we are standing cheek to jowl? Secondly, I think too many women are forced to live in very violent situations or very violent marriages for the sake of their children. Perhaps they don't have enough education, and the husband has a low-paying job, so you know the child support would be very small. Thirdly, I in the work situation, and I worked all my life. I came to resent the fact that a lot of these mothers were staying home, and some of them were, I'm sure, just because they wanted to stay home that day or 2 days. Their workload did not disappear. It had to be picked up by the rest of the working staff with no additional recompense for that situation. And I think there's just too much abuse in this mothers being able to stay home without any question. And another thing, I think when people are anticipating having children, there is no investigation of how much it really costs, the diapers, the childcare, all those things that need to be taken into consideration when you're having a child. I mean, you just have, in this day and age, you must consider that as part of whether or not you're going to have children.
Okay, Jerry, thanks for the call. A lot to chew on there. Anna, why don't you start, and then Glennis, we'll see if we can get through all of her points.
Well, yeah, there was a lot to chew on, and the East are very different subjects to touch on. I don't know where to start. The employer, I understand that's a common gripe, but that's really an employer issue, not the women who have children and need to take care of the children issue. I think employers should be more flexible, should support women in whatever they do. So I'm not sure it's really fair to blame the women taking care of children need care. So that's one thought. The other one, environmentalism, I know that informs a lot of people's decisions. I think that that's totally reasonable if that moves your needle, if that's part of your decision. I think that that's great, but that's definitely a factor that people are considering more and more. And the last one about the cost, it's so hard to generalize. I mean, where you live in the country, if you're close to your family or not, everyone's situation is different, but I agree that there should be discussion around it during family planning.
Glennis, do you want to add anything here?
Yeah. I think I hear from more and more women who are questioning whether they want to have children because of environmental concerns and equally because of the cost of child care. I think the Times actually just did a long series on that. The cost of child care, the lack of infrastructure around maternal health and child care in this country is in many ways contributing to women's decisions not to have children. And I absolutely agree with Anna about not punishing mothers who take time off to take care of their children. It is certainly, I've been in the position where I've picked up the workload, but that is a infrastructure problem in this country of how we value the role of mothers, the role of childcare, the expense of it, rather than, you know, women wanting time off, you know, from their office job. In my experience, I think it's honestly usually the opposite. But, you know, one of the things I think that because I'd spent so much time with children, one of the things that factored into my personal decision was that I knew all of the compromises and expenses and the reality of rearing children versus, I think sometimes we think about having babies the way we think about having a wedding. It's the wedding, mm-hmm. not the marriage. It's the baby, not, you know,
right.
the child rearing. And so I was very fortunate, I think, to come to it with a sense of reality, which, you know, is can be shocking to people.
We'll come back and have a little bit more of our conversation in just a moment. Author Glennis McNichol, writer Anna Goldfarb, talking with us about the conversations they have because they're adults who don't have kids. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network of WPR. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the trend to remain child-free. The birth rate in 2017 was the lowest it's been in 30 years. What does it mean for leaving a legacy if you decide not to reproduce? Anna Goldfarb writes about relationships and pop psychology for the New York Times, Vice, The Cut, and more. She recently wrote a piece for the New York Times titled How to Leave a Legacy When You Don't Have Children. My other guest is Glennis McNichol, writer and co-founder of The List. That's a networking platform for women. She's written pieces for The New York Times, The Guardian, Forbes, The Cut, and more. Her new memoir is called No One Tells You This. We have Patrick on the line with us from Rice Lake. Let's take that call to start the segment. Patrick, thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Thank you. Great show. Anne and Glennis, thanks so much for a terrific topic. My wife and I are childless by choice. My wife is a ballet instructor. I'm an emergency physician. We never, ever thought of having children as a way to leave a legacy. Instead, we've always thought that our lives would be the legacy that we hope to leave.
Patrick, thanks thanks for the call. Anna Goldfarb?
Real quick, I hear these terms being used interchangeably. Childless means you want children but medically cannot have them. Child-free means you can have children but you choose not to. So there is a difference in the terminology there. But I think it's I think he gets it. He probably thoughtfully looked at his life and his values, and he made something in line with what they're comfortable with. I think it's great.
Glynis, the way Patrick describes his view of legacy coincides with something that you've said yourself here this morning.
Absolutely. Live a good life. Hopefully that's the legacy you leave behind. I do think, circling back to the responses you get when you say you don't have children or don't want children, that being married or in a couple and saying that is a much different conversation than for myself, who I'm single. And that I actually think I get more response for the fact that I'm single than I do for the fact that I don't want kids. Whereas I know for friends that are, and maybe Anna can speak to this too, that are in couples, the response when you're married and say you don't want children is, it's a whole other conversation with a lot of intensity and judgment and expectations. And I think it's worth noting that those responses sometimes fall along two different lines because of that. But I agree. How you live your life, I think how you live your life should be your legacy, whether or not you have children.
So say I'm child-free, but I still have no idea how I want to leave a legacy. Anna, what can I do to figure it out? Any brainstorming exercises you'd recommend?
Yeah, well, the first thing is to write it down. Anything you want to do, write it down. And talk to people. If you want to leave something at your school, but you're not really sure where to start, they have offices dedicated to that. Call them up and say, hey, I'd like to leave something to the school. What do you suggest? Or a charity, if you want to get involved, call them up. Say, hey, I have about $5,000. I'd like to set up a scholarship. Can you help? What do you have in mind? What are your needs? There are places that are set up to help you. You don't have to do this yourself. And whatever you do, write it down. Prince did not write it down. Jimi Hendrix did not write it down. They did not have wills. All of their estate went to the government. If you don't declare where you want your assets to go, the government takes them. So it's really about having the conversations, having the intentions, and just putting it down on paper.
Glynis, we have about 30 seconds. Any final thoughts from you on this?
Exactly what Anna said. I think looking at these things in the face and making decisions and writing things down and sort of not avoiding them is the number one way to approach all of this, to just acknowledge what it is you want to do and then make a plan for how to do it.
All right. Glynis, if we want to buy a copy of your book, where will we find it?
In all bookstores or on Amazon.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd just toss that plug in there at the end.
I appreciate that so much. No one tells you this. I think it's available everywhere. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Glynis and Anna, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Glynis McNichol, writer and co-founder of The List, a networking platform for women, and Anna Goldfarb, who writes about relationships and pop psychology for The New York Times, Vice, The Cut, and more. She recently wrote a piece for The New York Times titled, How to Leave a Legacy When You Don't Have Children. This year, Wisconsin Public Radio is going beyond the ballot. We're asking people around the state what issues are important to them this election season. In Milwaukee's inner city, gun violence is a big concern and a real fear. But residents say the root of the problem is lack of jobs, and it seems like politicians focus on flashy investments like the new Bucks Arena and Foxconn far from their neighborhoods. Jane Hamden reports.
My biggest issues in my neighborhood is the killing. And just not the resources for the teens to have to be able to not be on the street.
The violence and poverty.
I have the issues with people killing up people, robbing people, breaking in people's houses.
At the Fondy Farmers Market on Milwaukee's North Side, conversations about violence are a contrast to buckets of cut flowers and tables loaded down with tomatoes and zucchinis. Amanda Reed is a home health care worker. She's picking up ingredients for taco sauce and guacamole.
It's nice because it's fresh and, you know, it's grown locally and hopefully not too many pesticides, you know.
Reed says she's not planning to vote in November. She's feeling pretty hopeless about her Milwaukee neighborhood after a spike in shootings this summer.
Places like over here is just broken, you know? Yeah, it's just Milwaukee just gets the short end of the stick.
The Fondy Farmers Market is held up as a success story, an answer to the crime and unemployment that plague one of Milwaukee's poorest zip codes. Ken Little works in city development. He says small investments like this chip away at the tough challenges.
Not trying to make excuses. You need to get rid of the crime. You need to get rid of the reckless driving and those kind of things like that. But opportunity and access to employment, I think, are those things that lift the community and that will help change those kind of things.
Milwaukee officials tried hard to get Amazon to put a distribution center in the Century City development on Capitol Drive, but Amazon said it was too far from the highway. Ken Little says maybe, but the fact is the inner city scares people away. Advocates say it's time to forget about the Amazons and focus on small local businesses like Good City Brewing, which did commit to Century City.
So we're walking now to the corner of 27th and State.
A couple miles south of the farmer's market, Evan Goyke offers a tour of his neighborhood.
You can see on the northeast corner, you have two abandoned boarded up buildings, a former theater, and there are groups working to revitalize those. But on the other corner, we have a Cash for Gold store.
Goyke represents Wisconsin's 18th Assembly District. His house is a grand old Victorian turned into a boarding house. He and his wife are slowly restoring it, but some would say it's a risky investment. His block is like hundreds in Milwaukee. It's a mix of empty, crumbling structures and renovated gems with flower pots out front. Goyke says his neighborhood doesn't need a huge development project. What it needs is a grocery store.
There isn't an entity on my block of 27th Street that needs $10 million, but there's 10 businesses that need $100,000.
Back at the farmer's market, Helen and James Perkins are shopping after church for their summer favorite, yellow squash and onions. Helen ran a daycare in the city for years. Now, as a retired small business owner, she sees politicians doing photo ops at Foxconn and the shiny Bucks Arena, but they never seem to come around to her corner of Milwaukee.
The inner city do need some help. There's no building up. Building up is everywhere else but in the inner city.
The Perkins will be voting in November, as they always do. They'll support candidates who believe Milwaukee's core neighborhoods are safe investments. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Jane Hamden.
For more information about Beyond the Ballot, WPR News Election Year Project, visit WPR.org/ballot. That's WPR.org/ballot. And if you follow us on Twitter, we just tweeted the link. Coming up after the news, we'll check in with Attorney General Brad Schimmel about news that testing of the backlog of untested sexual assault kits in Wisconsin has been completed. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. This is The Morning Show.